past and had lingered in his past instead of using his imagination to shape humanity's future. He once said, "To invent, you need a good imagination and a pile of junk." Apparently, Edison kept a lot of junk around. It took him more than 1,000 attempts before he invented the first commercially viable light bulb. Keep in mind, that was just one of Edison's inventions. He created the phonograph, the motion picture camera, the mimeograph, alkaline storage batteries, and even concrete and cement. In all, Edison was credited with 1,093 U.S. patents in his lifetime. Worldwide, he's credited with 2,232 patents. Yes, those are records. Edison was a pretty good businessman as well. He amassed $200 million of wealth in today's dollars during his lifetime. Do you think he got there by being bound by the failures of his past experiments? Not a chance. Edison is also credited with saying, "I have not failed. I've just found 10,000 ways that won't work." The world would be a much darker place, literally, if he had failed. Dreams are the product of your imagination at work. Imagining is therapy. It's healthy. So one of the best ways to be good to yourself is to put your imagination to work. Many people think of dreams as unconscious thoughts your brain manufactures when you're asleep. But the kind of dreams I'm talking about are your lucid dreams. You're more in control when you're awake. And while there's value in letting your subconscious work out your dreams and direct your energies when you're asleep, I believe your best dreams take place when you're wide awake. What makes humans unique is that our consciousness allows us to extend beyond the confines of present time and space. This other dimension is our dream state where imagination flourishes. That dimension is both wildly exciting and infuriatingly inexact. It's a place where you free yourself from your inhibitions, worries, and thoughts of the past. Therapists have long called this reconnecting with your inner child. Now I know why. If you're a logical and orderly thinker, it's okay to search for your future vision instead of getting hung up on the label of dreaming too much. Dreams and visions are interchangeable. No matter what you label it, you'll be energized by your vision, imagination, and your dreams. And if you're lucky, you'll feel uncomfortable too. Uncomfortable is good. Uncomfortable is necessary for progress. Uncomfortable means your imagination is working to plug in disparate thoughts to create something new. Remember, the past is familiar. The future is unknown. Uncomfortable is one of the necessary emotions you need to move forward. So hold tight to those uncomfortable feelings. They're valuable parts of the future you. Giving yourself permission to dream. Granting permission to live in your imagination and create dreams is one of the greatest gifts you can give yourself. There will be hurdles to overcome. You'll get stuck in self-editing thinking. Would people laugh at me if I did this? Could I lose friends or damage my reputation if I dare to do what I'm imagining? Should I conform and just do what's expected, even though it will make me unhappy? All of these are fear questions. As I've noted, all of them are based on the shackles of your past. One way to permit yourself to dream is to forgive others for past wrongs. More important, you need to forgive yourself. Dr. Wayne Dyer was fond of saying, "Forgiving others is essential for spiritual growth." That spiritual growth releases you from a lot of useless anger and pain. Spiritual growth is directly linked to dreaming and your imagination. It's another part of that other dimension so vital to living your most blissful life. Spiritual growth is also another way you empty your glass to make room for your new dreams. Dreaming requires a bit of self-analysis, too. You have deeply ingrained mental patterns and habits you're not aware of simply because you've carried around that deadweight baggage for so long. "I can't. I won't. That's not me. I'm not good enough. I'm too fat. I'm too old. I'm too young." You get the idea. The list of mental boulders blocking your path is endless. All they do is make you sad, stressed, depressed, and filled with anxiety. Once you identify those negatives, you can reduce or eliminate them through a better quality of intentional thinking. Replace negatives with dreams and visions that are exact, specific, and repetitive. Your dreams are best fueled by new ideas, thoughts, and thinking from unlikely sources. Quality dreams come from priming your mental pump with a wide variety of things that will interest you. Your brain, energized by your imagination, will set about the work of linking these seemingly unrelated thoughts to create ideas that may leave you amazed. Understand that our subconscious minds can't tell the difference between reality and imagined thought. That's why the things we focus on and continually think about eventually manifest in our lives. Just as imaginative thinking is not linear, so too is the timeline when your brain creates new dreams for your consciousness. Ever wake up in the middle of the night with the answer to a problem that's been vexing you for weeks? Have you been jolted with the solution to a thorny problem when you're at your kid's baseball game, when you're walking through Home Depot, or taking a morning shower? Your imagination has no concept of day and night. No brain says it will dispense ideas and solutions during staff meeting at 11 a.m. every morning. It comes when it comes. Pay attention when it does. Then take steps to record or remember your thoughts. Your subconscious has worked hard on your behalf, and it would be downright rude to let those thoughts slip away. Dreaming and doing. The power of one more is about thinking and doing. Up until now, we've talked a lot about the thinking part of dreaming. It's just as critical to put your dreams into actions that will push you towards your goals. In a baseball game, you can't be on both first and second bases simultaneously. Likewise, in life, you can't live in two places at one time. To steal second base, you must take your foot off of first. Guided by your dreams, you lead off first and make a break for the next destination in your life. You can either choose to stay stuck and live in your past, or you can choose to live your best life by dreaming and choosing to live in your future. When you intentionally act upon your dreams, you'll be amazed at how naturally you attract what you need. You'll start to understand that, along with bad habits, people who are bad for you will also fade into your past. As this happens, you'll begin to realize that it wasn't always the relationship that you valued. It was how the relationship made you feel. New dreams rewire your life, and when you make room like an empty glass, you will fill your life with new relationships and adventures. Along with your gut, intuition, and your imagination, your dreams will start to manifest in a way that lightens your load. You'll see exciting new possibilities as you move towards your future. You'll be a much happier person when you take your one more dreams and turn them into reality. Chapter 8. One more question to ask ourselves. The unexamined life isn't worth living. Socrates. Do you ever think about what you think about? This is a truly powerful question I ask. It's one of many questions I'm going to ask you in this chapter, and a question you should be asking yourself. The truth is, most people never do. Most people never take control of their thoughts because they don't ask the right questions, so they have a flawed belief of what their thinking should be. That leads to an equally fundamental question. What is thinking? Simply put, thinking is the process of asking and answering questions of yourself. That's how thought works. You constantly ask and answer questions in your head thousands of times a day. So if you want to change the quality of your thoughts, you need to change the quality of the questions you ask. It's the quality of the questions you ask that controls the quality of the thoughts you think. You'd be amazed at how finely tuned your brain is at finding you the answers you're looking for. Does that make sense to you? This could be a foundational, seismic shift in your life if you begin to ask better questions. Better questions lead to better answers. Better answers lead to a better life. Most people don't do this, but one more thinkers do. Most people ask questions that make them weaker, less resilient, or less resourceful. They take the easy way out. In some cases, these questions do harm by creating fear, anger, distrust, or lack of confidence. The Navy SEALs are taught to ask the question, "What in this situation can I control immediately?" By contrast, most people ask themselves, "What could go wrong? What can't I control in this situation? What should I fear and worry about?" Because most of us are hardwired to think that way. If you ask those types of questions, you're always going to find yourself under duress. The answers to those questions are the answers your brain is going to find for you. Self-examination is a critical process to uncover wisdom in your life. When you ask the right questions, you arrive at the truth about yourself. Unfortunately, looking inside your own life is not always fun. Your inner voice can be your most vocal critic, and self-accountability means there's no place to hide. But to achieve personal growth, one more thinkers must accept this challenge and embrace answers to big questions in their lives. Many times, people find it only takes one more answer to produce dramatic changes. Asking the right questions is the first step to getting the answers you need to make that happen. Getting answers removes roadblocks that help you create change. It's difficult to fix problems anywhere else in your world until you have your own house in order. Eugene Ionesco said, "It's not the answer that enlightens, but the question." You humble yourself when you challenge yourself to be better. And the best way to do this is by questioning the foundation of your thoughts and actions from day to day. The answers to these big questions are as unique as you are. There are no right or wrong answers. There's no one-size-fits-all solution. In many cases, it's like peeling back the layers of an onion because the questions you ask will lead to new questions based on your experience, memories, feelings, and relationships. Face these questions. Embrace these answers. If you're honest with yourself, you'll break through barriers that will lead you to an extraordinary life. What if you could find one more powerful question to ask yourself several times a day? It's impossible for me to guess what questions and answers are important to you. Instead, I've put together the following list to start your self-examination process. Certain questions will resonate with you. Pay attention. That's your inner you trying to tell you something important. Don't rush through these questions and the answers you uncover. Let the questions linger. Find a quiet place and let your mind go to work so the answers will have value for you. Also, think about the answers you come up with today versus the answers you'd like to have at some point in the future. Once you plant these future answers in your brain, your mind will go to work on your behalf to turn these answers into a new reality for you. Remember, one answer can create big changes, and asking one more questions is the first step to that desired outcome. One more questions to ask yourself to lead an extraordinary life. What one more thing can I do to show my spouse or my partner I love them? How can I do one more thing to improve my relationship with my children? Is there one more thing I can do to make my family feel more special? Is there one more thing I can do to show my appreciation to the people I work with? What's one more way I can adjust my thinking so I make fewer excuses? What part of this situation can I control right now? How is this happening for me and not to me? What's one more thing I can do to calm myself down today? Is there one more thing I can do to bring myself long-term peace? What's one more way I can worry less about what other people think? What's one more way I can bring my anger level down? Is there one more thing I can do so people will see me less different than I see myself? What's one more way I can worry less about the past? How can I implement one more way to worry less about the future? What's one more way I can get more excited about the future? What's one more way I will practice gratitude? How do I implement one more way to procrastinate less and protect a valuable asset of my time? What's one more way I can be less of a spectator and more of a participant? Can I do one more thing to ask myself hard questions even if I know I won't like the answers? What's one more way I will tell myself it's okay to fail and learn from my mistakes? Is there one more way to be a good steward with the money I have been blessed with? What's one more way to ensure my values are consistent with my standards and goals? In my work, is there one more way I can become an effective leader? What one more way can I become healthier? How can I make one more change to my diet to lose weight? What's one more exercise I can do at the gym to burn fat or pack on muscle? What's one more thing I can let go of that's been holding me back and that I'm better off without? How do I give myself one more block of time to let my mind wander and daydream? What's one more thing I can eliminate that's stopping me from doing the things I could be doing? What's one more way I can change my thinking so I complain less? Is there one more thing I can do to help somebody in pain who really needs me? What's the one more thing that has provided me with the most bliss recently? How can I do one more thing to handle conflict better? What's one more thing I can do better to deal with people in my life who drain the energy out of me? Is there one more thing I can do to carve out more time to be mindful and intentional? What's one more thing I should do to stop holding grudges? What's one more thing I have learned in life that I can pass on as a mentor to others? What's one more thing I can do to enjoy my work more? Was I curious enough to ask one more question to seek out answers to important questions in my life today? What's one more prayer I need to have or scripture I need to hold closer in my faith life? Is there one more way I can thank and honor my God for the gifts I received today? What are the answers? Answers to these questions may make you uncomfortable. Not always, but in many cases, to grow, the best answers will be the most difficult for you to address. You've heard the saying that there are no dumb questions in life. Not true. There are dumb questions. They're the ones that you ask that don't challenge you. They're the ones that provide you with convenient truths. You only cheat yourself and waste time when you ask yourself and others dumb questions. Making things even worse, deep down, you know you're doing this. If you want to be average, if you're happy where you're at because you're comfortable, scared, or lazy, or you don't want to know how to make your life better, then don't ask the questions that lead you to your growth. Nobody can force you to do anything you don't want to do. The greatest gift is not being afraid to question, Ruby Dee once said. If you're not healthy enough to want to gift yourself with the truth, then don't get to the end of your life with regrets. Some questions won't have immediate answers. Don't assume defeat if you can't apply logic and solutions when that happens. An answer to a question you ask may not come until later, or not at all. Give yourself credit for having the courage to ask the question and seek the answer. Remember, one question often leads to another, and another, and another. Enlightenment travels a lot of different paths. Learn to live with great unanswered questions in your life. Seek the answers daily. Some will come to you like a lightning bolt. Others will come to you over time. Either way, living with the extraordinary questions and answers of your life is one of the most admirable traits of a one more thinker. Chapter 9, One More Goal. May He give you the desire of your heart and make all your plans succeed. Psalm 20, verse 4. Throughout our lives, we've been inundated with systems, philosophies, and methods about how to set goals to make our life better. There's definitely no shortage of resources on the subject. It would be naive for me to think that you're not already using some kind of strategy related to your goals. Instead, I want to improve how you approach your goals and goal-setting process. Here's a good place to start. I believe goals are energy. Goals are a life force. Goals are a state of being. They're more than a manifestation of the ideas, hopes, desires, and dreams you have inside of you. The pursuit of your goals, when properly executed, is the transference of energy into action, creating one of the purest forms of one more in your life. Too often, though, goals aren't designed as a conscious decision to improve your life. Often, you set goals as a reaction or response to something that is happening in your life. Instead of playing defense, the key is to proactively fill your mind with the right kind of thoughts about your goals. When you do, your entire being is invigorated to accomplish those goals. That's because the mind always gravitates to what it's familiar with and draws in whatever resources are necessary to propel you forward. What you think leads to what you need. When you consciously access what you need, your mind sets about the business of making your goals a reality. The relationship between standards and goals. I go into standards in greater detail in Chapter 10, but I wanted to briefly make sure you understood why goals and standards are linked together and how they work in tandem for your benefit. Many confuse the two, but they aren't the same. You create goals based on desired outcomes that start as thoughts in your mind. For example, I'd like to make money to donate $10,000 to my favorite charity, or I want to take a trip to Europe this summer, are worthy goals. But without a plan of attack to achieve your goals, they have much less of a chance of becoming a reality. Your first order of business is to figure out what you're willing to tolerate to meet your goals. What you're willing to tolerate becomes the standards you must implement. Standards are the actions linked to the thoughts you have related to your goals. Creating goals without creating corresponding standards is a waste of time. Your standards must be even more intentional than the goals you create. Think of your goals as the byproducts and results of your standards. Conversely, when you put the proper standards in place, you have a much better chance of achieving your goals. The other thing is, you can't always control the outcome of your goals. You will fail at achieving some, and you should. For goals to be meaningful, they must be difficult and challenging. However, you can control your standards because they are internal and rest entirely on you and how much you're willing to invest. With that distinction made, you already have a sense of why goals are important. But, in my opinion, some of the thinking about goals and how to create meaningful and achievable goals for your life is entirely wrong. Keep it simple and flexible. There are thousands and thousands of people out there who happily want to give you a system of creating goals. Here's the problem with that. One system doesn't fit everyone's needs. That's because every one of us processes information differently. You're a unique product of your past experiences, education, thoughts, gifts, shortcomings, and relationships. A system does not fit everyone's processes for creating goals. Some people think visually. Others rely on auditory input as a primary way to process information. Many people prefer a tactile approach with the need to literally touch their goals, which is a more kinesthetic approach. If you've ever gone to a car dealership to test drive the car of your dreams, you know what I mean. Most of us blend these and other approaches to varying degrees in ways that reflect how we've been conditioned to process information. That's why it's impossible to create a goal-setting system that works effectively for 7 billion people on planet Earth. The other reason I believe many systems don't work is that they're often too complicated. Elite performers, CEOs, and other highly motivated, results-driven people don't have the time or inclination to dive into elaborate ways to create goals. The right way to approach setting your goals is to keep a simple plan of attack. I'm going to give you a flexible way to do that so it makes sense for you, no matter who you are. It's not a system. It's a loose framework you can adopt to execute actions in the most direct way that works best for you. Creating your goals in your peak state. You can only create your best goals when you're at your peak state. This state occurs when your mind and body are functioning optimally together. Breaking it down further, think of your thoughts as your conscious mind and your body as your subconscious mind. When your conscious and your subconscious minds work in congruency, you have a powerful force that multiplies and heightens your peak state. I refer to our body as our subconscious mind because too often, we only focus on our thoughts when it comes to creating our own goals. Our thoughts are what put us in a conscious state, giving us what we believe to be the right frame of mind to reach our goals. However, we don't realize that for our mind to function optimally, our body must also function optimally. Many people don't pay attention to their body when setting goals, and in this way, it becomes a subconscious mind. When we don't put our subconscious mind in a prime state, we're not using all the available tools we have. Unless we tap into all these tools, there's no way our goals will best meet our needs. When these tools are in sync, even when your conscious mind isn't actively working on your goals, your subconscious mind will keep pushing forward. Here's a critical point to remember. Your mind always moves to what it is the most familiar with. When both your conscious and subconscious minds are engaged on your behalf, you are working on your goals all the time. That's why this concept is so powerful. It's also why attaching compelling reasons to your goals is critical for your success. Compelling reasons drive your goals. Compelling reasons will give you the energy and resiliency to push through the difficult times so that you can reach your goals. Compelling reasons translate into goals you're passionate about. Goals are all about change. That's why your goals need to challenge you. If they aren't challenging, then they won't change you. All you're doing is wasting your time. It's not compelling enough to say you'd like to raise $10,000 for your favorite charity because it would be a nice thing to do. Make it emotional. The more emotional you make your compelling reasons, the more energy and resiliency you will attach to it. And that means you're more likely to raise that $10,000. For example, you need to set your mind that raising that money will give children a place to go after school, something you never had as a child. Or put researchers one step closer to curing the disease your mom passed away from. Maybe that money can make a difference by paying for badly needed supplies at a battered woman's shelter. When I was younger, I had some heart problems. I started thinking about all the things I would miss if I passed away early in my life. But the one image that caused me to make changes in my life was the vision I had of not being able to walk my daughter Bella down the aisle on her wedding day. I can't even begin to convey the emotional impact that had on me. Armed with that compelling reason, I started going to the gym, eating better, reducing my stress, and adopted an overall healthier lifestyle. It's not simply a matter of being more disciplined or more driven. There needs to be an emotional component linked to your goal. That's the compelling motivation that keeps goals from becoming lethargic burdens. As you create your goals, decide the who, what, and why, reasons for what you're about to do. If you aren't fired up, then you'll have a difficult time fighting off the distractions that will try to dislodge you from your goal. Make your compelling reason your suit of armor to stave off these kinds of attacks. Many goal-setting systems also encourage you to create goal categories. Don't do it. You have one life. There's no need to complicate it by categorizing them as finance, faith, fitness, or family goals. Keep it simple. Why burden yourself by complicating goals designed to make your life easier and better? When you create a single list, the only thing to keep in mind is whether you're creating a momentum-building goal or a stretch life-altering goal. Momentum-building goals are easy to hit. As the name suggests, they build momentum in your life. They're shorter term with a more immediate payoff. You get a reward you can build on. Stringing enough of these together is a lot like gathering speed going downhill. The only caution here is to make sure that these types of goals are still meaningful and challenging. Life-altering goals are harder to hit. You raise the bar on these with the idea that they will produce a bigger payoff and result in bigger growth in you. They take longer, sometimes years, to accomplish. The two can be linked together. Let's use a very common goal as an example, losing weight. Start with your compelling reason, which is not to die prematurely because you're fat. A momentum-building goal is losing 2 pounds a week or 8 to 10 pounds a month. If you set your standard the right way by eating the proper foods and exercising regularly, this is a short-term goal that's very doable. If you're grossly overweight, you might set a life-altering goal of losing 100 pounds or more. The only way you'll do that is by hitting all your shorter, momentum-building goals. You can't lose 100 pounds if you don't first lose 2 pounds, right? Goethe understood the relationship when he said, "It's not enough to take steps which may someday lead to a goal. Each step must be itself a goal, and a step likewise." Finally, when you design a goal, you carve out a space in your brain that didn't exist before. This space needs to be nurtured. You have to figure out what resources you'll need to help reach that goal. Is there a book you should read? A person you need to connect with? Maybe there's a place you need to visit or an activity you need to perform. Fill that space with the right tools to accomplish your goal, or you risk starving your goal into failure. Nevertheless, you can have all your compelling reasons and resources in place, but if you don't think you deserve the goal you've set, you will struggle. Goals and self-worth. If you don't believe you're worthy of a particular outcome, you're self-sabotaging and you'll never produce a greater result than what you think you're worthy of. Think of it as pulling on both sides of the rope in a tug-of-war. Even if you win, you lose. You must build two things into your thinking as you create your goals. One, ways to increase faith in yourself. And two, ways to increase your identity when you look in the mirror. Both are integral parts of your self-worth. Unless you're confident in who you are and what you deserve, you'll limit yourself in the goals you think you deserve. You must be aware and smart enough not to undermine your efforts. As you believe, so too will you achieve. Your conscious and your subconscious can be great allies, but if they're not working together, they can be mental landmines that will blow up in your face. Using positive energy to create your best goals. Many people live with chaos, angst, anxiety, and suffering every day. Under this burden, they react and respond to these mental states to escape. When you create goals under these circumstances, you're reacting to conditions instead of taking the reins and designing the life you want. When you respond and react, you're moving away from something to avoid it instead of moving towards something better because you want it. You need to set goals only when you're operating out of your imagination and dreams instead of out of your history and fears. The next obvious question is, how can I do this? To design your goals, you need to lock out external factors and influences. With so much on our plates every day, this is a challenge. One way to prep your mind is to ask yourself this question: would the quality of my goals and outcomes improve significantly if I created those goals operating under a state of confidence, strength, and bliss, or operating out of a mindset of fear, failure, and depression? Better goals create better outcomes, and better goals are created when you shed the negatives in your life while deciding what you want to accomplish. Again, there's no fancy formula here. I want you to keep it simple. Remember to create goals in your peak state. To find your peak state, physically get your body moving. Go for a walk or a run, hit the gym, ride a bike, take a swim, or do some jumping jacks. When you do this, you're creating the energy I talked about at the beginning of the chapter. That energy generates endorphins that are released when you put your body in motion. The endorphins unleash your peak state, and your peak state plugs into your best creative state. In your best creative state, you're able to see things differently. You imagine possibilities, and the adrenaline drives the confidence you need to develop your absolute best goals. When you generate this energy, it's transferred into your goals. I told you, goals are a form of energy. Now you know what fuels that energy. After you've created your goals, one of the keys to realizing them is repeating them often. When you repeat your goals, you fill your mind with thoughts your mind needs to help you accomplish your goals. For maximum effectiveness, repeat your goals to yourself when you're in a peak state as well. To create congruency between your mind and body, your conscious state and your subconscious state, you must repeat goals in the same state you created them in. If you don't, there's a chance your mind will reject the goals. Your brain and your body should be in sync. Engage a variety of tools to help you repeat your goals in your peak state. Use your cell phone, pictures, notes, daily appointments, or whatever tools you think are appropriate to reinforce repetition. Also, the best way to create your goals is to create them in multiple time frames. Lots of people wait till January 1st every year to do this. I can't even begin to tell you how lazy and inefficient that is. By contrast, elite performers create and review goals several times a day. To design your goals instead of responding to circumstances in your life, create goals hourly, daily, weekly, monthly, yearly, and even 3 and 5 years out. The best set of goals have hybrid time frames. That means you're working on goals with a sense of urgency, momentum goals, and long-term goals, stretch life-altering goals, all the time. Placed squarely in front of you, these blended time frames make it easier to get into the habit of repeating your goals regularly. This is how you anchor your goals to your conscious mind. When you anchor goals to your conscious mind, your subconscious mind automatically kicks in and your brain goes to work on your behalf. how I create goals. How you create goals is going to be unique to you. However, I wanted to share with you how I create goals so you can get a better sense of how all the thoughts and strategies mentioned fold into a practical example. I would never presume to tell you precisely how you should create your goals. You must find a way that works best for you. Your process will be different from everyone else's, and that's the best way to ensure you create goals that work for you. For me, every year I come up with a one-word strategy that serves as an overarching theme for my goals. This reflects what my priorities are and where I'm at in my life. Some of these words I've used in the past are relentless, faith, resilience, love, caring, and gratitude. And once I decide on that word, I step into that person. My goals remain unique, but this one word quietly drives my process in the background. I repeat that word all year long. With this word in mind, after putting myself in a peak mental state, I start my goal setting with a mental flood. It's exactly what it sounds like. First, I turn off the part of my brain that thinks I can't do something. Then I see myself as a child on Christmas Eve, and I make a list of all the gifts I want to receive. I do this for 4 minutes. No editing, no throttling back. I write down everything that comes to mind. I give myself permission to empty my brain of all my desires, big and small. While I'm doing this, I get up and move around. I make sure my blood is flowing. I remain in my peak state and create a strong internal energy flow. Once I have a single master list, I do several things to lock in this set of goals. After I confirm that I have a compelling reason, I drill down to ensure the goals are specific. Generalities don't work. My brain and yours can't work effectively on processing generic ideas. A brain works best when front-loaded with detailed and precise pieces of information. I wouldn't say, I want to get in shape and lose some weight so I feel better. Those are empty words and wishes. Instead, if losing weight is my goal, I zero in on the exact waist size I want, precisely how many pounds I want to lose, and what I want my cholesterol and blood pressure readings to be, and so on. Being vague gets in your mind's way. Being specific means being accountable. There's no wiggle room. In business, it's not enough to say I want to make more money. I need to come up with an exact amount. That is why I decided I wanted to make $1 million before I turned 30. Part of the specificity of goals must include a date and a deadline. Otherwise, it's little more than an open-ended wish. Next, I decide who I want to help me be accountable for this goal. It might be my wife, my business partner, or my pastor. But for my goal to work, I have to share what it is. There's an undeniable power in telling someone. Discipline and accountability lead to ascension and dominance. With these things locked into place, I start to work on my goals. Part of this involves reading and visualizing my goals often. Sometimes this can even be several times a day. I found that the most effective form of repetition is to repeat my goals out loud. There's an added layer of impact when auditory senses are engaged. Visualizing is critical too. How you visualize is up to you. Some people use dream boards and photos. Others put written lists on mirrors in their bathroom or cars. Personally, I like to visualize in my mind. That's how I think, and it's what works best for me. Experiment with what works best for you. The other part of repetition is that I say things I genuinely mean. Some goal-setting systems require you to act as if you've already accomplished a particular goal. Do this, and you're only lying to yourself. You'll knock your mind out of sync. Don't say I've got $1 million when you're not there yet. I found that repetition is hard for a lot of people. Personally, the way I do it is that I include my goals in my prayers, and I pray every day. Others meditate daily, and this is another great way to visualize goals as well. Repetition is also easier when it's done at the same time every day. For me, I like repeating my goals in the morning when I first wake up and at night just before I go to bed. Repetition also engages the reticular activating system, or the RAS. The RAS is the mental muscle that filters things into your awareness that are important to you and filters out things that are not. You can read more about the RAS in Chapter 2. Finally, one last thing I do when setting goals is that I create an expectation that I am going to reach that goal. Have you ever noticed that goals you expect to happen are the ones you seem to hit time and time again? Expectation creates a positive framework that brings forward the tools and resources necessary to succeed. When your brain expects you to be successful, it goes to work putting solutions much closer in reach that you can take full advantage of at all times. As a one more thinker, you need goals in your life. When you craft them the right way, they will challenge you, energize you, and bring passion and focus to everything you do. Chapter 10, One More Higher Standard. Of all the judgments we make through life, none are more important than the estimate we place on ourselves according to our own internal standards. Dennis Waitley. I've got a mind-blowing revelation for you. There's a very high probability you're not going to reach your goals, but here is some great news. You're absolutely guaranteed to get your standards. Yep, that's the real truth. Fortunately, goals and standards are two sides of the same coin. They are inextricably linked together. That means if you want the best possible chance of reaching your goals, you need to adjust your standards, and reaching your goals will become almost automatic. Here's how. The difference between goals and standards. Many people I meet confuse goals and standards, often mistaking them as the same thing. They are not. Before you can achieve your goals, you must understand the role standards play and why they're so important. Here's the key difference. Goals start out as thoughts. They are desirable outcomes that take root in your mind. Your brain either confirms these goals or they pass as fleeting thoughts. When you decide you want to achieve your goals, you create standards as a means of taking those thoughts and applying actions to them. Think of standards as the performance benchmarks you're willing to tolerate. Standards are the actions that propel you towards your goals. Goals effectively become byproducts of how you approach your standards. Goals without standards are empty. Goals without standards are useless. The world constantly tells you to review and upgrade your goals, which you should be doing. But the secret is to constantly review and upgrade your standards. You need to evaluate what you're willing to tolerate and not tolerate. What are you willing to tolerate? When you set a goal, you must decide if you can tolerate the standards that are essential to reach your goal. Tolerance doesn't only apply to the things you need to do to move your life forward. Your tolerance level can apply to many different areas, such as your existing relationships, leadership, and business dealings. Right now, can you tolerate the business results you're currently getting? Can you tolerate the amount of money you currently make? Can you tolerate the amount of bliss or passion you currently experience? If you can, you're going to keep getting them. It's only when you decide that you can no longer tolerate the treatment you're getting in a relationship or the business results that you're getting that you can change them. It's only when you decide you can no longer tolerate the amount of money you're making that you'll begin to move toward your goal of making more money. If you're willing to tolerate something, that's probably what you're going to get. If you don't change your standards, then your goals are irrelevant. Many people fail or are miserable because they set standards that are too low for how they want to be treated. If you don't establish what your standards are and clearly define them, other people will act to undermine them simply because they aren't clear about what is acceptable to you and what is not. Sometimes the downward push can unintentionally come from well-meaning people in your life who may not even be aware they're doing this to you. For example, if high standards and boundaries don't exist between two people, the relationship will be troubled and often fail. Your relationship standards must be clearly defined and mutually agreed upon. Also, never tolerate treatment less than what you're worthy of. Set standards in your relationship with your spouse, boyfriend, girlfriend, business relationships, or anyone else in your life. Make those standards consistent with your self-worth. In business, an organization without high standards is an organization that is out of control. It's an organization not performing at peak capacity. As competitive as business is, that's a recipe for failure. In your business, can every employee tell you what the organization's goals are and what the standards are to achieve those business goals? And just as important, can they live up to them? The greatest companies and the dynastic sports teams always set the highest standards. Where you find your standards. You already have standards that define your life. Understanding where those standards came from is one of the steps of leveling up and creating higher standards that will lead you to change. Your standards reflect the people you work with, your parents, friends, family members, your church, social media, news media, and the books you read. You have other tribal influences as well. If you're an athlete, you idolize stars like Simone Biles, Mia Hamm, LeBron James, Mike Trout, or Patrick Mahomes. Techies identify with Steve Jobs, Mark Zuckerberg, and Jeff Bezos. Intellectuals are moved by great thought and religious leaders like Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., Mahatma Gandhi, Ayn Rand, Rick Warren, or Brené Brown. And you can never underestimate music's power through artists like Michael Jackson, Beyoncé, Adele, Taylor Swift, John Mayer, Post Malone, or Ed Sheeran. You may have been influenced by one-off casual conversations you've had with strangers. By our nature, we are social creatures. We need input. We seek validation in our relationships. Most of us enjoy belonging to a variety of groups of like-minded people. We like exchanging ideas and learning new things that grow and shape our perceptions. These perceptions influence our beliefs about our world, our community, our family, and most importantly, our own being. You can't turn off these types of interactions. You'd wither and die. But you can be more aware of how these interactions shape what you think and how that defines you as a person. Make it a point to understand how they impact you from a behavioral, moral, ethical, and godly perspective. Think of your brain as a blender. Once you're exposed to different ideas, your brain takes all that input, whether you agree with it or not, and blends those thoughts to create something new. You may completely reject new notions on the surface, but subconsciously your brain processes things over time, and you might change your way of thinking, perhaps in a way that leads you to higher and more enlightened standards. The incoming information you receive daily is inevitable. To activate the changes meant for you, there must be a conscious decision to take only what you think is valuable and apply it in a thoughtful way to create unique standards. If you're lazy and go with the standards of the people, places, groups, and media you're in proximity with, you'll get the same things as everyone else. That isn't the way to your best life. Activating to a higher standard. Are you happy with the amount of money you're currently making? Perhaps you've been stuck in a job that's paid you $75,000 a year for the past 3 years. You tell yourself, I want to make $100,000 next year. That's your goal. The question now becomes, how will I get there? And that's where standards come into play. Standards are the specific set of actions you must take to achieve your goal. In this case, you might need to increase the number of calls you make to clients or take business classes that add to your value, making you a more attractive candidate for a promotion. You may need to come to work earlier, stay later, put in time on Saturdays, or find a new job that pays you what you think you're worth. Standards are most valuable when they are precise. Make 20 calls per week to clients, take classes that will lead you to your master's degree in 18 months, commit to working 6 hours every Saturday and staying 2 hours later 3 days a week. These actions become your standards for reaching your goal. Unfortunately, many people never get beyond dreaming about their goals. Even if there's a strong desire to achieve the goal they've set, they don't want to pay the price for reaching that goal. In all parts of your life, when it comes to goals and standards, they must be aligned to find harmony. That harmony will breed success. Goals without standards are just a bunch of rudderless thoughts and words. They're only unattached desires that will never materialize unless you pair them with the right standards. If you've created goals and fallen short, it's because your standards are not congruent with your goals. Here's something else that is truly liberating. When you set the right standards that match your goals, your life becomes much less stressful. Your goals, while important, become secondary. That may sound a bit counterintuitive, but it's the truth. For example, if you want to build a championship team, what are the preparation standards you're willing to tolerate? What are the execution standards you're willing to tolerate? Coach Nick Saban is the greatest college football coach of all time. His teams have won more than 80% of the 300-plus games he's coached. During the 2020 season, he won his 7th national championship, despite contracting COVID-19 midseason. Even more impressive, his Crimson Tide rolled to an undefeated 13-0 season along the way. Coach Saban sets a different kind of standard than most other coaches. Those coaches create the standard of, we'll practice until we get this right. Coach Saban sets the standard of, we'll practice this until we can't get it wrong. That's next level thinking and next level standard. It's also a championship standard. The difference is so subtle, but separates the greatest of all time from the rest of the world. 9 ways to set a higher standard. Setting clear and defined higher standards is personal and unique to you, but there are some universal principles you can apply that will ensure you create quality high standards no matter what your goals are. Here are some things to consider. 1. Understand your why. Unless you're clear on your motivation, you won't develop optimal standards for your goal. It's a lot different saying, I want to lose 50 pounds because it might be a good idea, instead of, I want to lose 50 pounds because my back hurts. My doctor says I have high blood pressure, I'm borderline diabetic, and I might not live to see my grandchildren. The stronger and more specific your reasons are for doing something, the more likely you'll stick with your standards. 2. Break down a higher standard into detailed and achievable steps. Don't say, I'm going to get up and run a little while, then lift some weights. Be intentional, meticulous, and specific. Tell yourself, I'm going to run 8 miles 3 days a week. Work with a trainer to create an optimal strength training routine that I'll do 5 days a week, and I'll change my diet to a lean protein and plant-based menu. 3. Be honest with yourself. If you take on the workout regimen above and you're 55 years old and weigh 350 pounds, not only are you setting yourself up for failure, you're setting yourself up for a 911 ambulance ride. Don't let your ego run your mind when it comes to setting realistic goals and standards. Start at a place that makes sense for you. You can always upgrade your goals and standards once you start making progress. Be measured and transparent with yourself when developing your standards. 4. Get help in areas where you're weak. Find a workout buddy. Enlist a seasoned business mentor. Listen to motivational tapes and podcasts. Surround yourself with like-minded people on like-minded journeys. Do whatever it takes to fortify your efforts. There are going to be days and periods where you'll waver. You'll want to give up. That's normal. You may question if your goal is worth it. You may tell yourself that your standards are too high. Welcome to the human condition. This is where mental discipline comes in. Revisit your original motivation. Understand what influences are holding you back and then eliminate them if possible. Well-intentioned friends, family, and business associates can be your biggest enemies, but they are also your greatest allies. Like it or not, you care what they think, good and bad. They're part of your inner circle and will constantly influence your thoughts and your actions. It's up to you to filter the messages that are positive and meaningful to you. Don't be swayed to a lesser outcome simply because of familiarity. Worthy goals and corresponding standards are not supposed to be easy to reach. If your willpower wavers, redouble your efforts and give yourself credit for being smart enough to recognize you'll have to work harder as part of your process. 5. Use technology to set and maintain your new standards. Not so long ago, self-improvement gurus preached that you need to write down your goals. Look into the bathroom mirror, repeat those goals every day. We've come a long way since then. To optimize the possibility of being successful, tap into technology to help you set and maintain your standards. Use your cell phone or computer to create a video of your goals and standards. Talk to yourself. Do it when you're in a focused, high-energy state. That way, when you play it back, you'll be watching yourself in a peak state every time. Unlike only writing down your goals and standards, you'll get the added boost of auditory and visual stimulation sent to your brain. Your brain's synaptic plasticity will improve. When this happens, your brain is better able to flex and adapt, creating enhanced avenues for learning. You are watching that person you want to be. Think of it as you 2.0. 6. Give dedicated thought to the relationship between your goal and your standard. Venus and Serena Williams didn't learn to play world-class tennis by going out after school a couple of times a week and playing a friendly match here and there. Both women became highly accomplished tennis players because they spent thousands of hours honing their skills, working on every little part of their game, eventually to become legends in the game. They created standards commensurate with their goal of being the best tennis players in the world. When your standard does not match what's required to meet your goal, you won't be properly motivated. If you set your standards beneath your capabilities, you won't feel challenged and you'll lose interest. Low standards produce low results, so why bother? 7. Forget perfection. This is an absolute killer. Perfection is the lowest standard there is, and realistically, perfection doesn't exist. If you want to frustrate yourself and give up, assume that you must be perfect. Even the Williams sisters have lost plenty of matches along the way. Perfection is also boring. It's our flaws that make us interesting, human, and relatable. Everybody has flaws, and those who think they don't have any are the ones who have the biggest flaws of all. 8. Don't overthink it. Be diligent and thorough, but for goodness sake, get over yourself and get your butt in gear. I've seen thousands of people become their own worst enemy due to overthinking. I've seen so many people have great ideas for incredible businesses, only to tinker, dabble, focus on the minutiae, and fizzle out before they even reach the starting line. Thinking is good. Overthinking is bad. 9. Set standards to please yourself. I've covered this already, but it bears repeating simply because we're hardwired to please others. Be selfish when it comes to developing your standards. This is your journey. This does not belong to anyone else. It's personal. Keep it that way, or you're just going to waste time, wind up with a big mess you don't want to buy into, and end up in worse shape than when you started. I love Rick Pitino's take on this. Set higher standards for your own performance than anyone around you, and it won't matter whether you have a tough boss or an easy one. It won't matter whether the competition is pushing you hard, because you'll be competing with yourself. Raising your standards is an ongoing process. Nobody knows better than you what your standards should be. That said, developing standards isn't always an easy proposition. If you're trying to break out and do something new, you might not have all the tools or knowledge you need to accurately assess what standards you'll need to develop to reach your goals. The good news is, they aren't set in stone. People often create standards they think are in line with what they need to reach their goals. However, as they gain experience and other variables come into play, these dynamics can create a need to dial up to a higher standard. Your standards should be appropriately challenging. You will grow and change along the way. So, you should review your goals and higher standards regularly. When you've mastered a standard and met your goal, adjust upward. If you've been diligent in your efforts and something is starting to feel easy, you'll know. Maybe it's time to set a different goal with different standards once you've accomplished what you want. But for a remarkable difference in your life, consider leveling up by creating a higher standard that will propel you to an even more worthy goal that builds on what you've already done. Also, it's unhealthy to compare yourself or your standards to others. This is your journey and yours alone. Keep it that way. You have no clue what someone else is going through, even when they tell you, especially when they tell you. You're only going to hear what they want you to hear. When you compare, you're also tempted to adjust your standards downward to align with someone else's standards. That's unacceptable. It's human nature to compare, but I'm telling you now, don't do it. Consider the alternative. Suppose you compare your standards to someone else's and you discover their standards are incredibly high when stacked against yours. In that case, you may be setting yourself up for a big psychological disappointment. It's a waste of time and doesn't do one thing to move you closer to your desired outcome. The only thing you should be comparing yourself to is you. The consequences of higher standards. Change creates consequences. Setting higher standards creates consequences. When one more thinker set a higher standard, you'll experience consequences, good and bad. The good is obvious. When your goals are aligned with your higher standards, you'll enjoy a fuller and more blissful life. When you repeat this process in several areas of your life, you'll experience a powerful transformation. Not only will you treat yourself better, you'll treat others better too. Likewise, others will understand that you have a higher expectation of how you want to be treated, and most will honor that expectation and treat you with the added respect. However, some people in your circle will become jealous of your discipline and success. If they continue to doubt you, remain jealous, or if they can't see that they can share and celebrate your success, you need to reconsider your relationship with those people. They'll get over it soon enough, or as harsh as it may sound, you may need to let them go. As you develop higher standards, you'll also enjoy more resilience. You'll bounce back from setbacks quicker. Your higher standards will become habits and replace the lesser standards that used to guide you. Even if you don't fully succeed, you'll still fail at a higher level and land at a higher baseline. Once you dust yourself off, you'll be in a better place to move on to new goals and higher standards. Setting standards in your life is not easy, but consider the alternative. If you aim low, set unworthy goals, and create uninspired standards, you'll end up living a life far below what you're capable of and far below what you deserve. Chapter 11, One More Impossibility Thinkers and Possibility Achievers. One's philosophy is not best expressed in words, it is expressed in the choices one makes. In the long run, we shape our lives and we shape ourselves. The process never ends until we die, and the choices we make are ultimately our own responsibility. Eleanor Roosevelt. The fundamental philosophy of One More combines both the acts of thinking and doing. To fully realize your best life, it's not enough to think about what you want to do. Your thinking can be pristine and spot on. Unless you put actions to those thoughts, you're not going anywhere in life. One more thinkers must also be one more doers. To frame the marriage of these two elements in the right way, I want you to become an impossibility thinker and a possibility achiever. Learn to think and do rich. If you're serious about improving your life, one of the best books on the subject is Napoleon Hill's Think and Grow Rich. Generations of successful business people, entrepreneurs, entertainers, athletes, and those of more modest means and goals worldwide have gleaned valuable ideas and been inspired to next levels of greatness after reading this seminal book. As a One More Thinker, you should read Hill's book if you haven't done so already. It has several great tools to break through barriers and become a more dynamic impossibility thinker who dares to dream about things that most others think of as impossible. Your dreams equal your riches. Maybe your dream is to live on a ranch and raise cattle in Wyoming, or to launch a company that provides clean drinking water to impoverished areas of the world. You may dream about making a living playing music or acting and bringing joy to others as an entertainer. I have profound respect for both Napoleon Hill and Think and Grow Rich. My only issue with the book is that I don't think it goes far enough as a high-performance cornerstone for contemporary times. When it was written in 1937, the world was a very different place. America was deep in the midst of the Depression. Vast numbers of people were out of work and starving. Problems in Europe were starting to foreshadow an ominous future of what would become World War II. Americans needed hope. Napoleon Hill, inspired by a suggestion from Andrew Carnegie, delivered it to them. More than 80 years after it first debuted, Think and Grow Rich has sold more than 15 million copies and is considered a must-read for anyone who wants to succeed in any line of work. All the principles in Think and Grow Rich are critical for success. They're worth mentioning because they're still valid and powerful strategies today. Those principles are: thoughts are things, desire, faith, auto-suggestion, specialized knowledge, imagination, organized planning, decision, persistence, power of the mastermind, the mystery of sex, transmutation, the subconscious mind, the brain, the sixth sense. If you read the book, you'll see that all of these concepts relate primarily to thoughts. But you don't get rich by simply thinking. You get rich by doing. More specifically, you get rich, highly productive, or happier when your thoughts and your actions are congruent. Although one of Hill's most famous thoughts is about action, the man who does more than he is paid for will soon be paid for more than he does. His book doesn't go far enough. You must marry actions to your thoughts if you want to reach your goals. Your thoughts are the starting point of your dreams, and you owe it to yourself to aim high with your dreams. The sad part is that many people never get beyond dreaming. Their dreams end in their thoughts. That unrealized potential to do something great and be happy can be maddening. Dreams are the essence of impossibility thinking. You must be able to dream to plant the seeds of what you think you can do in life. It's when you combine that impossibility thinking with intentional actions aimed squarely at achieving your dreams that you become a possibility achiever. Think of your dreams as challenges that live inside of you. You lose nothing by challenging yourself this way. It's healthy, and I strongly encourage you to think long and hard about what will help you find your version of riches in life. But don't stop there. To realize what life has in store, you must think and do rich. Dreams and thoughts without accompanying actions will only depress and frustrate you. One more thinkers understand this and implement an updated corollary of Newton's third law of motion. You know the original law, which states, for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. In this case, that updated corollary is, for every thought, there is an equal and complementary action. Thoughts and actions act as a pair. Borrowing more from Newton's law, one more thinkers also understand that the size of the thoughts you have should be equal to the force of the actions you should take. You can't always control your thoughts. That's the beauty of the human brain at work. There are no wrong dreams in your head. The problem is that it's impossible to measure your thoughts or the thoughts of someone else. However, you can control what you do, and what you do is measurable. For example, if you work out at the gym and you want to increase your arm strength, 2 sets of 8 reps on the dumbbell curls can become 3 sets of 10 reps. If you want better cardio fitness, 30 minutes on the treadmill can become 45 minutes. Instead of working out 3 days a week, you can go to the gym 5 days a week. Measuring your progress by measuring your actions makes you a possibility achiever. Are there risks and costs associated with taking action? Of course there are. But the risks and costs associated with not taking action are a lot more. Inaction stifles progress and kills personal growth. Your time is finite and limited, so why would you continue to sit still instead of engaging in the life you are meant to lead? Become an impossibility thinker and a possibility achiever. Great philosophers throughout history have long understood the link between thoughts and actions. The Greek philosopher Epictetus encouraged his followers to not worry about anything outside of your control. The only things you can command are your thoughts and actions. We choose our response. Stop aspiring to be anyone other than your best self, for that does fall within your control. 1 John chapter 3, verse 18 tells us, "Let us not love with words or speech, but with actions in truth." Mahatma Gandhi is one of many who voiced a version of the following: "Your beliefs become your thoughts become your words. Your words become your actions become your habits become your values become your destiny." Mark Twain kept it simpler but equally effective when he wrote, "Actions speak louder than words, but not nearly as often." The concept of being an impossibility thinker and a possibility achiever is not new. The problem is that putting these two ideas together is often overlooked. Procrastination, denial, or fear are common reasons why thinkers get stuck thinking and don't move on to doing. Lots of guys will see an attractive woman and think about asking her out, but only a few will break through their fear or procrastination and have the guts to follow through. Ever see a beautiful woman on an average man's arm and ask yourself, "How did he do that?" He did that because he's a one more impossibility thinker and a possibility achiever. Babies are remarkable human beings. Take the simple act of a baby learning to walk. All his or her life, a baby has only known crawling. They see other humans upright and walking around, and they begin to imagine a world where they would break through the impossibility of standing upright on their own. At first, they'll grab onto a coffee table or a couch and pull themselves up. They will fall. There will be a few tears, bumps, and bruises. Eventually, that baby is going to stand upright, put one foot in front of the other, and much to mom and dad's delight, start walking like it's old hat. It takes babies hundreds of hours of practice from the moment of first learning how to stand to walk unassisted. It's a monumental achievement worthy of every parent's celebration. If a baby can do it, you can become an impossibility thinker and a possibility achiever too. You must be willing to dream big, take a chance, set your barriers aside, and do it anyway. Whether it's learning how to ballroom dance, day trade stocks, or set a goal of headlining at Carnegie Hall, put your subconscious to work, and soon enough, your actions will propel you towards your goals. Watching your silent movie. If you show me your actions and behaviors, I can show you how you think. That's because what you do is a reflection of how you're thinking. However, what you're thinking isn't always a reflection of what you do. This is important because once you understand how the relationship between a person's thoughts and actions work, you can predict their behavior. I'm sure you'll agree. That's a powerful tool to have at your disposal. Here are several examples of what I mean. I can't tell if you're thinking about going on a diet to lose 40 pounds, but I can tell you what your body will look like based on how you eat and work out. Do you gorge late at night on cookies and ice cream, or do you hit the gym and go for a run several days a week? Several tells for a woman going on a first date with a man will reveal to her the kind of guy he is and whether she should carry the relationship forward. These aren't disqualifiers, but they are indicators. For example, does he open doors for you? If you're at a restaurant, how does he treat the hostess and the waitstaff? Does he shut his phone off when he's talking with you? Or at the very least, apologize if he has to take an important phone call? What many people call women's intuition could just be highly tuned observational note-taking. When you're sitting across the table from someone attempting to negotiate a big business deal, what does that person's body language tell you about their interest level? Are they anxious to wrap things up? Or do they ask important questions to drill down to the deal's finer points? Do they try to grind on you every little detail? Or do they understand the best deals are win-win and instead seek common ground? In these situations, and most of your interactions with others, what you do trumps how you think. Your life isn't based on your thoughts. Your life is based on your actions. Show me what you do, and I'll tell you what you think. To illustrate the point, I've developed something I call watching a silent movie. Suppose in all your interactions with others, there was no sound. You had no choice but to make assumptions and decisions about others based only on what their actions were. In effect, no sound means you can't hear their thoughts. However, despite no sound, you can still see the outcome of their thoughts by how their silent movie plays out in front of you. Here's another easy way to understand and test out watching a silent movie. The next time you're sitting on your couch at home, find a show you haven't watched before. Flip it on, but then mute the sound. Romantic comedies are an excellent genre to test out. Often, the plots are centered on hidden desires that reveal themselves over 2 hours. Play the game. Can you figure out the plot based on the action only? You may already do this when a friend or family member calls you during a show you don't want to stop watching. You mute the television. You have a short chat, all the while eyeballing your show. Most of the time, when the call ends, there's no need to rewind. You just unmute and keep watching your show, never feeling like you missed a beat. Alignment is the key. In life, winning is all about how well you interact with others. Trying to understand what's on someone's mind is a critical element for a positive outcome. Except, as I've mentioned, you can't always tell what people are thinking. Yes, many people do tip their hand by talking too much. But just as many people hide their thoughts by being tight-lipped, in some cases, they'll even lie to you. What works well in reading other people works well for you, too. Alignment between your thoughts and actions is essential for success. Even though balancing thoughts and actions can be a challenge for many people, alignment occurs when your thoughts manifest themselves in the actions you take. This is why the best of the best become influential.